sitting there. I think we shall have to start those that are not in. We'll have to get us on the way. The meeting has been scheduled for 9 o'clock. We have to start. Firstly, I wish everybody all the best in the new year. It's not so new, but still it is relatively not old. So we hope that after 2010, if a very successful 2010, we shall be in a situation to look at our performance in 2010 and be inspired into more successful activities in 2011. So before we start, I would ask Ambassador Makubela to introduce his team, and then we shall proceed.
Chair, thank you very much. Thank you very much, members of the committee. It is always a pleasure for us as a department to come and share what we are doing with members of the committee, and we really appreciate the support, the chairperson, we've received from you and your members during 2010, and we hope that during 2011 we will enhance our cooperation and our working together with yourself and the committee. We clearly understand the critical responsibility that you have as a committee to exercise an oversight over the department and to hold us accountable to what we are supposed to do. We really appreciate that, and we take this very seriously, Chairperson. Chairperson, the question of the coordination within government, as you know, it's a huge challenge. It's something that we're grappling with, and Victor Wood, the Deputy Director General responsible for policy development and monitoring evaluation at the Department and Research, would run us through the presentation. And we also have Pierre Bueller, who's our Chief Director, and she's responsible for issues of transformation and so on within the Department. So we shall collectively endeavor to really give clarity where necessary after the presentation, Chairperson, if you allow me, and with your permission, we then request Victor to run through the presentation. Thank you.
So before that, you start just to introduce the presentation. I think tourism depends largely on many, many stakeholders over which the Department of Tourism or even the Minister has got no control. So it is important to develop relationships that ensure that we can deliver even better. In order to succeed, we've got to try and promote these interrelationships between the national sphere, the provincial sphere, and the local government sphere. Our constitution states clearly as to how these relationships relate. But having said that, it also depends on the department as to how it leads, because we don't have to forget that at the end of the day, we are looking for more tourists, and then in more tourists, we'll get more jobs, and then for more jobs, we'll get also more sustainable livelihoods, small enterprises that can deliver a few jobs here and there, and help our government to grow, and grow in an inclusive manner where the economy benefits everybody from every background. We do not know whether the pending legislation assists, but we shall hear from the department. Over to you, Mr. McQueen.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and good morning to the member. Thank you. We don't have a long presentation. Fairly short to allow us sufficient time to provide clarification. It's alluded to. First and foremost, when we got it, we looked at it from two perspectives. One was what is the current status, and what guides that current status. The other was what should be looked at going forward that will then bring about the improvement. We spoke specifically to the heading itself. Now, broadly, this is the overarching mandate, but what is more important is that this being a legislative competency of both national and provincial, it really emphasizes the point that you just made, Chair, that we really need to have synergy. We also have the white paper, which broadly provides form of a guideline in terms of how we should be developing tourism. And we've got this current legislation which at the moment is under review, which we believe that we would bring it in line with the Constitution, because it does predate the Constitution. But also it would also take into account the fact that we are now a fresh mandate, which is now departments that we focus on. We've got a national tourism strategy which now looks at what we're going to be doing from now until 2020. But it aligns to all these other concerns that we've spoken to. And of course, we do take into account the intergovernmental relations presently in terms of how we then coordinate, particularly in instances where these structures are provided for by the legislation and for their functionality as well. And of course, at local government level, it's not necessarily a legislative problem, but obviously we should take into account that local government has developed bylaws and so on and so forth, and as such, some of that also has implications for tourism. Now, what we tried to do was we wanted to spread the functions, the different functions, so that we are able to see what happens in each of the functions in terms of the current state of alignment, the current state of integration, current arrangements in terms of trans-city. The National Department is responsible broadly for the knowledge management framework and the research framework broadly for the sector. And if we were to look at, for instance, within that particular area of research and information, local government has got function as well, and if you look at the information center, if you look at signages and so on, but the framework would have been provided by the National Department. But when it gets rolled out, these things are specifically within the local government area. We have a technical committee that looks at research agenda body, and the significance of it is that it comprises of national, provincial, and SAUGA as well, and it actually then gives us a much broader scope in terms of being able to understand the details that each of these is. We've got national and provincial registers in terms of tourist guides. This is one area where there is complete alignment in the sense that the national register does not necessarily individually register people that are within the provinces. The provincial registers that are actually responsible for registration of these guides at provincial level, and once they have done that, this information is fed through to national register. And that then leads to a detailed comprehensive database that actually gives us a picture which guide, which area, and what specific area of guiding are they focusing on. And of course, there are provinces where there is registered, so the database, the databases we can support us, and some in terms of operators, there's one at SAC in terms of the national level, there's one in the department, but we need to find an integration of all these particular databases so that we've got a total picture across the country. In terms of planning, the national department is responsible for the national strategy. And then when we do this, we make use of MINMEC, which is the committee of minister and the MEC, to be able, and MINMEC is the technical committee that supports it, which is the committee of the Director General with the HOD. Now, we make use of that to be able to create proper alignment for the plans that are coming out from national. We also participate in the provincial growth and development strategies and also in the IDP. But here I should also mention, last week, for instance, we made a presentation of the national tourism strategy to the KwaZulu-Natal cabinet by invitation, and it came from the Premier's office. And we have made a year before a presentation to the fitting of all municipalities within the Western Cape with the MEC of Economic Affairs, and we had also made a similar presentation to them. We have taken this presentation also to Free State. So we're trying to make sure that when it comes to the tourism agenda, is that alignment with the national strategy around. Within the national government, the Director General is a member of the economic sector and employment cluster, which comprises of all the economic sectors, and also is a member of the international cooperation trade and relations cluster, which focuses on South Africa's international agenda broadly. Quite significant in the sense that in the first one, this is the cluster that drives that will drive the implementation of the growth path. And tourism is actually a pillar of the growth path, and almost a double dipping if one is to use that kind of way. In the sense that services sectors are prioritized in the growth path, but tourism then got lifted out of it and prioritized individually as well. And in the internationalization cluster, tourism is a major pillar of that particular strategy. The current revision of the strategy makes emphasis in terms of tourism. We also make use of strategic bilateral engagement. Some of these are at ministerial level, some of them are at DG's level. This is where we address issues such as air lifts, infrastructure, visas, environmental issues and so on. So this is done largely through bilateral mechanisms at the moment. I've spoken about the growth path. We are also in the ITEC too. And these are implemented through those classes. We would like to get to a point where we've got a common budget structure with the province, where if we are saying this was meant for product development, we focus on that. This is meant for marketing, we focus on that. That is something we are working towards. If I may give an example, the IEC, for instance, has an arrangement with National Treasury. And their arrangement is such that if anyone talks about developing a brand, whether it's national, whether it's provincial, whether it's local, National Treasury should simply say, we have seen you want this money for development of a brand. Have you spoken to IMC? If not, please go and speak to IMC. And as such, it has rationalized the focus in terms of dedication of resources specific to those particular functions. Policy development, the National Department was responsible for the National Policy Framework. And again, we made use of MINMEC to ensure that there's consultative. Largely even before we actually take some of the policies to cut. We with regard to policy development, we make use of FALCA. FALCA is a member of MINEC, so they have got a councillor who is actually a member of MINEC, and they also participate at MINEC level as well. And that gives us a better way of actually getting a sense of what is coming. They are the ones that would coordinate, get the consolidated input, and then we would get the picture that comes. That doesn't mean that we don't have advantages, we do, but we are also able to get an integrated view besides the individual view that would be coming from. Of course, we have indicated that we can't ignore the fact that local government does have the responsibility in terms of development of violence and so on. And this, in the end, would also have positive or negative impact. An example here that region normally uses is with regard to the rate increases. The increase of rate, for instance, applies to everybody. It's not going to be just the domestic consumption. It would apply to business consumption as well. Now, when that increase comes through, it has to be passed on to the consumer. And when it gets passed on to the consumer, it then has an impact on the price. And the prices then have an impact overall in terms of the uptake and so on and so forth. So it's a chain reaction. We have a governance working group which supports the mid-term system, and this gives the space for integration of this policy. Now, what we do is it's not just that what comes from national should be discussed there, but also what is coming from provinces should be discussed there. So if there's a province that is proposing amendments to its legislation or bringing in an entirely new legislation, we should be able to get that directly, also be able to deliberate how the group then affects the other. The example is if you take the Kruger National Park and all the municipalities that actually go through the Kruger, there's two provinces, but there's a couple of municipalities that actually are along it. And if you've got no synergy in terms of the policies, in terms of the particular, in terms of bylaws and so on, then there could be a whole of challenge. You get through this gate, you come out of the other gate, you're still in the same country, but you are actually in a different region. Product development, at the moment what we've got, we provide some form of financial support through the Social Responsibility Initiative, which is largely linked to the We have the Development Enterprise Partnership that supports the development of small enterprises. One of the questions that come up here often is beyond financial support that SMEs require. What are these other instruments that must be in place to provide support to SMEs? So their failure in some instances is not necessarily because of financial. It's a whole lot of other factors that must be taken into account. And of course, the provincial government come in when it comes to issues of public transport and special training from we have this committee, which is the Product Development Committee. But members of provincial departments, but also members of people from national departments. The significance of this is that we are able to collectively look at implementation, for instance, of the global competitiveness study, which was done in 2006-07, and it has actually got specific product-related recommendations. And in fact, when the rollout has to come in, it's going to have to take place within provinces, especially within municipalities and so on. So it gives us that wider view. And the other project that they have done, which was a bigger project, was actually the development of the investment pattern, which then indicates which areas are viable, where, what can be put there and so on. Again, linked to that sort of global competitiveness project. These are some of the schemes that actually exist. With the DPI scheme, the issue here is that we have not necessarily been directly involved with that particular scheme or department. So the decisions that were taken, they are largely business decisions, but then they are small things that come up from time to time which do require some serious consideration. Typical example is people would go and put together an establishment. The person would get a house, which is fully paid, assesses the viability of that particular area and realizes that there's something that they can get out of it. But then they go and mortgage their house. They put the money into their own personal account. And they renovate this thing, make it a very, very, very good viable establishment, grade it and so on. When they go to the PTIM scheme, to say, I've already now put so much and I would like to. PTI asks basic questions, where's your account? And they produce a personal account, not a business account. Their requirement, for instance, that it should have already gone a certain length to be able to be considered with its own business account. And just on the basis of such simple methods, then they would not necessarily be able to access it. So these are issues that going forward we should be able to get to address. So these are the non-financial issues that can lead to success of quality assurance, one national grading scheme, we are aware that there is AA. We're talking about the grading council, we're talking about the government law. The issue we're talking about here is alignment. So that one national grading scheme, we've got provincial assessments. There are some provinces that actually share assessments in Cape and they are for a sharing arrangement. But the most significant thing is that it's one scheme, and that is the same scheme that is applied to the world. The assessment is actually national, but there are people that actually are able to go and look at this establishment, collect that particular data to say this is what it has and so on, and then give the decision that would come out and make it. And local government responsibility in terms of the maintenance of infrastructure within the local area, the health and safety issues from the point of view of health inspectors that will come to places like restaurants and so on, that's quite significant because it really adds value to the whole quality dimension and plays a huge role for local government in Africa. In as far as marketing is concerned, I mentioned we are one of the pillars of the international nation strategy. We're looking at expansion of our efforts in terms of getting into new markets through the diplomatic mission. We are conscious of the fact that we can't have FAT's presence in every other country. The resource wide between Africa and Africa. And we'd like to work with this going forward to get some level of awareness in terms of the people that are posted, so that they get a broader understanding, a better understanding of the dynamics beyond the market access. The other aspect is of the branding. We work with the INC and the CDI to show that there's proper alignment in terms of the brand South Africa. We have got joint branding initiatives in terms of promotion. This was more so during the World Cup, it was very, very visible. Working with the GCIS in terms of issue statements. This relates to basic issues. When there's an incident in South Africa, GCIS issues a statement. It's not the tourism authority that issues that statement. So our role is to be able to access the market and so on. But the other aspect we need to work with the other product is that level of synergy. There is a marketing working group which comprises all the CEOs of the provinces as well as South African tourism, and it actually discusses the marketing strategy of South African tourism. And also things about the other. Issues of transformation, one charter, and the national department currently has a mechanism in terms of monitoring of whether we are actually working. The most important thing here would be to get local government on board, to get provinces on board, in terms of their own consumption patterns, but also influencing broader consumption of the provincial government, not just the tourism element of it, and also the local government commission. And again, we on the skills issue, we work with PISA, and this is an area where, yes, we've got the strategy in place. We need to make sure that we really get the right level of skills out there. What is more important to mention is that we are not the training institution. We facilitate the framework for that. We don't train the department. We also work with the Department of Education, the Department of Labor, and during the transition where we're still going to be there's a shift of mandate to come to the people. And that is a special dedicated focus. So that in the end we can have the academic institutions and so on, which are in higher education, taking that and the curriculum, talking to these issues of tourism. One of the gaps currently, the harmonization, this is a very important area, which is what we have already emphasized in the student generation, in terms of making sure that if it's bylaws across the product line, we are able to have some level of synergy. If it's some decisions that are going to be taken, those decisions, we weigh them and we understand what the implications are and so on. But it's really largely about making sure that there is alignment in terms of policy and legislative development. The budget, institutional and budget structure, quite significant. And then the issue about tourism forecasting in the provinces. What is currently existing is that we have a national department of tourism. In the provinces, the Department of Tourism could be tourism, economic development, could be environment, agriculture. It's a number of those, and they're in one. So if DG wants to have the mid-tech meeting with the HOD, it may be that on the same day there's actually a MINMEC with agriculture, or there's a MINMEC with environment, and so on and so forth. It becomes very challenging in terms of trying to get coordination going in that type of arrangement. We don't necessarily have the tourism cluster, so as such, and that's why we're using this approach of getting to other departments through bilateral. We would like to get to a point where, even if it's an expanded mid-tech for DG, there is people that come from transport that then come into this. There is people that come from home affairs that come into this. The reason for that is because at the moment, if we were to go in a mid-tech or main-tech arrangement, we still talking amongst ourselves. And we're talking about the same challenges that we have and how we're going to resolve it. But we are not necessarily bringing the other people that you were talking about in terms of things that we don't have control over as such. Somebody must come on board, and it's about coordination. We'd like to actually get the contact with international data agencies. Domestic tourism promotion. This is an area that requires significant focus. It's an area that DG has prioritized for the coming year. It's an area that would require significant effort from provinces. One of the things that you were talking about as we were discussing this matter was, why isn't it that we have presence of other provinces in the other provinces to promote their provinces there, instead of actually putting money going abroad as provinces and municipalities, and we go and try and get into one single space, multiplicity and duplicity and so on, of messages from South Africa. There is so much that could be done. provinces going into other provinces and making sure that they are promoting themselves vigorously within those areas and so on. And we also want to make sure that we significantly focus on the culture of travel. That there's two dimensions to this. One is to get people to understand travel so that they can then be part of the client base. But the other one is about people understanding the value and benefits of tourism broadly, so that whenever there is a tourist that enters a particular place, they know this particular tourist is in need of value to the country and to that specific area. Going forward, in the implementation of the National Tourism Sector Strategy, which broadly will cover most of the issues that we've talked about, and then of course, constitutional policy gets so that we continuously improve. And again, I must emphasize, this is about continuous improvement going forward. And we would like to enhance the relationship with government, departments, spheres of government, with business. I must say we have been established with the election to come and just look at what is the current state of things from their perspective. So there is relationship, and it's a relationship that we value and we think we should be able to maintain it. We think NGOs also have a role in terms of us listening to the issues on the ground. Also, creating this culture of tourism will require that local communities understand, and to get to communities, it will be through those leaders within the community. They are able to spread this message and so on. An example that we had was that in the Nigerian area, the communities wanted to get development going, particularly when it comes to schools and so on. So they would go and say, would like, they would put a bigger corporation that is doing some business within the area, the oil. And they would say, we would like $10,000 to want to build a school. And they would say to them, we can't afford it, it's too much money. So when that happened, the community started to engineer other efforts, and they went for the kidnapping. So they kidnapped people that worked within the. And when they kidnapped people that were high profile within the organization, and they started negotiating for ransom, they actually got much more, 100,000 instead of the 10,000 they were asking for. So it actually became a way of life where people then started going to these people and say, look, I work there, I've been working there for some time, don't you want to come and get me? I mean, the person then goes there. Get this person, when you go to this person, they go with this particular person. After a week, 2 or 3 weeks, he's out. 3, 4 weeks after that, he's driving a big car. So we don't want those kind of things to happen. That's why we say communities must be quite close. We should work with them, and we should get them to understand the broader game. And the media, we don't want this ad hoc approach. We want them to understand the whole strategy going forward, so that as we work going forward, we are able to work with them in partnership. Thank you.
Thank you, thank you. Thank you for a very, very effective and brief, distinct presentation. We have heard that in the National Food Park Tourism, one of the pillars. You go to heaven, Lord. We'll take you there. Are you too scared of the fork? Now let us just then look at the presentation. There was the issue of bilaterals between departments, MINMEC, consultation and then the legislation, the DTI scheme, which clearly needs some improvement, and the quality control, the provincial assessors, and I don't know how they are harmonized, but that could be an issue. The issue of local government and making it health and safety, quality control, the Department of International Relations and Cooperation, supporting transformation and people development, skills development, and then the issue of gaps, working with the other departments and other spheres, and then the issue of travel. Here, the Department of Transport, the issue of police that you mentioned, but also the issue of new developments in terms of railways and so forth that could be there in the future, but I don't know how far that is. And how do we fit in the national improved path, given the fact that there is a lot of infrastructure development and services? Are we going to channel that development to tourism, and if so, how? And local government, what are the plans? Those types of things. But it's not for me to answer or to ask the questions. It's for you to ask the questions, and then I'll just regulate and facilitate. And then if I feel that something really is lacking, I'll ask the question, but otherwise, it's over to you. Let's start in the row. The ones who came last will have to ask the questions first. How about that?
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, I want to welcome this presentation. Also, I think it will also give estimates, really. Because when the SNM, the head research technical committee, started to ensure this alignment across here, when we're visiting provinces, there were challenges even in this issue of signages, because there is this difference. I say we cannot put signage in the national roads in there. Now that there is this integration, I'm sure it will then make things easy. Because the local government was saying, we can put signages, but we're not allowed to put it. As a result, the people that are having businesses outside the national road in the township, they cannot be advertised because they are not allowed to put the signages in this road, and then this was prerogative. So for me, I think this then will assist us in a way, so that then that integration will assist in terms of even publicizing our businesses in the township, so that then they all grow together. That's so far. That is my comment.
Okay, I think there the problem also is in, say for instance, you want to put a sign on the N1 as a town, then there are hassles, and then there has to be a balance between overcrowding signage and having appropriate signage. But I don't know how then we are going to improve, but there was a complaint. Are there any efforts from the department working with the Department of Road and Transport on this matter? Oh, Manjobi, okay. Is it in relation to that question?
No, no question.
Okay,
you're quite in terms of the regulations governing our road systems. We do have the municipality roads and we have the national roads, and they are all regulated differently. And the responsibility in terms of putting signage on this road lies squarely with the responsible agency. Now what we are working with the chairperson is to ensure that even at the national level, that issues that are reflected on the road must also take into account the local municipalities and so on. So there's a clear understanding. We work very well, for instance, with both the provincial local government and the national government in the Drakensberg Transfrontier, where we're developing some tourism infrastructure stretching into Lesotho. We're actually in the process of rolling out the signage in the area, and the signage in the area are a true reflection of what is happening in that particular area. So there's a great deal of appreciation, but there are regulations that are governing the amount of signage, as you correctly stated. What you don't want is to have all the billboards and the advertisement boards filling up the road to an extent that they are obstructing the road instructions, because that then becomes a hazard even in the management of the road act. So those are the challenges that are related to that. But there's a great deal of understanding, I must say. Thank you.
I see the bilateral ministerial and the PP bilateral, but at the same time we also speak of the tourism cluster. So what is the difference, in other words, in terms of the discussion that goes on there? So what is the main difference there? I'm trying to find out on the question of integration, planning together, and so on and so forth. I feel you've got this bilateral arrangement, and several of these bilateral arrangements, but at the same time, we're talking about the tourism cluster. And the second is, on page 6, the last bullet, it speaks about the provinces. Or the provincial government department providing funding for tourism development. All right, we are aware that this should be the case. But at the same time, there has always been this complaint, you know, and feeling that the provinces are not, sorry for that, that they are not giving enough attention to tourism in terms of their budget. In other words, tourism is not prioritized in terms of the budget. I just want to find out from the department why the department would like the provinces to also prioritize, you know, tourism, particularly because it goes a long way in creating a job. But what is the feeling of the provinces? What is their complaint about not being able to provide in terms of the budget for tourism generally? I hope I'm making this clear. What do they say? What's their main problem? Because this has been the general complaint. It may not probably affect all the provinces, but I think the provinces that are not, for instance, not as rich, if I might put it that way, as the others. This has been the problem. Probably I'm excluding provinces like Gauteng, maybe the Western Cape. But I think for the rest of the provinces, we find that, like the Eastern Cape, for example, with the Northern Cape, the budget for tourism is really big. Not much is given towards tourism. And yet, we are saying that tourism can create jobs, and I'm sure the Department of Tourism would also like them to pay more attention to that. But now, what do they say?
Thank you, Chairperson, and apologies for coming late. And fortunately, you didn't make a follow-up on those who come late should be the first to ask questions, because I'm one of those. I'm sorry for that. I also welcome the presentation by the department, except that it's got too many acronyms, which sometimes become a challenge to us, because we don't work in that environment, so we are not conversant with the acronyms utilized here. Secondly, how do you envisage you would embark on to initiate participation in the DTI incentive scheme? How does it work, meaning the scheme itself? I'm asking this because I believe that for a small operator to start a business, any business, he first of all has an idea, and he does a business plan, and there is market research testing the viability of the same business. But we always, as small operators, especially from the even currently disadvantaged people, we always have the challenge of access to finance. And if what I hear is going on with the DTI incentive scheme is a reality, then it means there are very few black people or underprivileged people who would actually get into business. And if they manage to do so, they just scrape through and have a small venture capital, and after that there is nothing, and he cannot sustain the business for the period that, you know, is expected of him to sustain the business, that is growing the business and improving it. Now, what I want to find out is, how does this scheme work? Because having to finance people who already have got or have established something is rather very difficult for small operators. Also, for people to go to banks to access finance, the bank, most of us are very unbankable, and we have got unbankable business plans anyway, so it becomes very difficult to get access to finance. Then how does the scheme work? Is there a way the Department of Tourism can, for instance, take over that finance scheme, that tourism incentive scheme, and manage it on its own, or is it an impossibility? Thank you.
Take over from the DTI.
Yes, Chairperson, because that is what creates a lot of problems, to have your monies, your beds, kept in another department. It is impossible for you. Besides, the DTI does not really, cannot fathom the difficulties that are within that particular industry. It becomes very ridiculous to have your beds kept by another person, and whenever you want to spend, You cannot, and you do not identify or can identify yourself with the problems that are experienced by that particular venture. Thank you.
In fact, I think one of the disadvantages was that we are one of the programs in environment and tourism affairs. They were program 4. I think with this autonomous arrangement, perhaps things will move more towards tourism. But that should be the response of.
Oh, sorry, Chairperson, can I add on to the question? Something, another point. Also, there was a complaint about the unemployability of the tourism graduates in the tourism industry because of the curriculum that they've gone through, which is not, which doesn't talk to the demands of the industry. Has the Department of Tourism, as of, I think 2 years ago, we had a presentation about them or the department looking into this problem. Has anything been done yet about the change of curriculum or methodology? I don't know what exactly is the error within the curriculum, but I think the subject contents are not relevant to market trends in the tourism industry. Thank you.
Okay, over to the
President. I shall endeavor to take one or two questions, and I'll ask my colleagues to intervene on other questions. I'd like to take the one that relates to provincial authority or authorities prioritizing tourism. I think all of us, we know that the first thing to do in prioritizing any activity is to first develop a very coherent and comprehensive strategy in terms of what you need to do, what are the benefits. And once that has been done, you can then start to look for resources, and you can then start to prioritize the use of your resources. Now, indeed, this is a huge challenge, and the provincial government has been a huge challenge of the national government for quite some time, because even within the national government, tourism, you recall, since 1994, has been relegated to a branch in the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism. So now changing the mindset and really to start focusing at this is going to be a monumental task to allow people to shift their own views and really realize the benefits that tourism can bring into the economic well-being. That's one critical issue. It's an issue, I'm glad that the national level is being addressed, because there are, as Rita indicated, there are different forums that tourism starts to take very active participation, and there's a great deal of understanding that as we promote the country outside, we're not going only to speak to people to come and do investment and so on. We also want to attract people to come and look at this, because we realize that tourism is an asset that we have as a country. If you go to provincial governments, the challenge is much more daunting, actually. Because if you look at the provincial governments, as Victor was saying, national level, we have about 32 departments, I think. If you go to provinces, some of them are having 12, and they share all those responsibilities. And then quite honestly, because tourism has become the less glamorous since 1994, it's not given that priority in provinces, where you find there are about 5 minutes in one MEC's portfolio, the equivalent of about 5 ministries, 6 ministries. The coordination of that is a huge challenge, and the prioritizing of that is a huge challenge. And that's why you find a trend and tendency that each time there's something huge, like during 2010 World Cup, a lot of provincial governments are focusing on tourism because they saw it as an issue. If you were to go back to them and see the World Cup has come and gone, what a province is doing in terms of tourism, you would find that there's actually virtually nothing. And it comes from, unfortunately, the psychosis that we have developed in the last few years, that the focus on tourism is relegated to the periphery. Now, we're not going to, I don't think we should let the situation go on unattended. There's a need really to start reflecting on this. Now, Victor has also spoken about, that's why, let me come back to this, that's why if you look at the mandate of domestic tourism, there's nothing that has been done on domestic tourism. You go to South Africa tourism, we spend about 600, 700 million funding South Africa tourism. You look at the amount of money that they spend in stimulating domestic tourism, it's nothing. And yet, if you go to the legal mandate of South African tourism, you realize that they have the responsibility to promote tourism both domestically and to market it internationally. The domestic element has been relegated. And it has to do with the whole historical, background related to this. From 1994, there was not much focus and attention. It's only now that is happening. Is it going to change? It's something that we expect to change at the national level. I agree with you, Chair, that the need to provide leadership at the national level in terms of the critical importance of tourism and how it can contribute. And because tourism essentially, Chair, it contributes on two issues. We create jobs, we contribute to the GDP. Our contribution to the GDP then goes to attract, to attend to all related issues, poverty alleviation, dealing with that. Now, we're not involved in that distribution. What we want to ensure is to measure our contribution into the GDP. So that focus is quite critical for us. Now, it's not only us at the national level who ought to do this, but working with provincial structures. But I must say, since at least I've been in the department, that there are better mechanisms for coordination. Victor was talking about the bilaterals for minister and the bilateral for the director general and the structured meeting arrangements, which sometimes are not held as frequent as we may want to. For instance, we could not have a MINMEC meeting sometimes in November because there was no quorum at the MIPTEC, which is the technical team to provide support for ministers. We could not have a quorum, and as a result, the meeting could not take place. But understandably so, because of the tasks that different MINMECs are having and so on. So that's where the huge challenge is in terms of the provinces being able to focus. Victor spoke earlier on also about, because the mentality has been for quite some time that tourism, we're looking at tourists in terms of foreign tourists. We never looked at ourselves doing a lot of tourism and sustaining the infrastructure in the tourism sector that we have created to start encouraging people to travel within the country. So that element of domestic tourism is quite critical, and it suffered over the years. And then that's why in this city, for instance, we have about 16 five-star hotels. Now, 16 five-star hotels, we're running at full occupancy during the World Cup. But after the World Cup, I came here on Sunday night. The city is alive with possibility, and there's a huge buzz in the city because there's a movement in terms of parliament and so on. But later on, you're going to run into the same problem. But the only way to sustain that is to encourage domestic tourism. And the latest challenges to the domestic tourism, it speaks about issues like what Victor was reflecting on, the bylaws. It's a huge impediment. Because in this city, I must say, during the course of this year, the industry was saying to us, or last year, I'm sorry, was saying that the municipalities are going to create rates and taxes by about 30%. Now, if that happens, what the hotels do, they pass the bill to consumers, and we become very much uncompetitive in the process. Now, it's disheartening from where I'm sitting. Sometimes you read that municipalities are unable to spend their money. And yet, they keep on levying this rate on local business and stifling business. It's an issue that we need to deal with. I think in the process, we destroy our own tourism infrastructure by robbing Peter to pay Paul, because at the end of the day, one must suffer. So these are issues that are related that will really need to be synergized properly, but you would know much better. The level of sensitivity that's involved with local government, with provincial government, once you start saying things, and people are starting to say, oh, you are the national government, you want to dictate agendas to us. So those are some of the tension and the pressure points that we need to manage carefully as we deal with this issue. But the bilateral engagements are nothing else but we've decided that in order to pursue this, we're not going only to use structured meetings like the MINMEC, the MIPTEC, and so on. But at the bilateral level, from the Director General to the Minister, there are issues that we need to deal with. For instance, we've had a very good bilateral discussions with the KZN MECs to raise the idea that promoting domestic tourism, you don't have to go to London. They open up an office in Joburg. If you think that's where the critical market comes or the mass of people come from, create an office in Joburg, be able to market KZN in Joburg. Similarly, Western Cape can do the same. Open an office somewhere and be able to promote, particularly during the low season, be able to go out and market to ordinary people what are the benefits of traveling and going there. And it will make sense over a long time. Other countries are doing the same. If you go to New York, you will find that the Florida office for tourism in New York, they are there to attract people to go and travel to Florida. When it's freezingly cold in New York, people migrate to Florida. But domestically, so that's something that we really need to start thinking about. It just doesn't make sense to me. I'm sorry, maybe to other people it does make sense. It doesn't make sense to me to get the Garden Route entity, the Garden Route entity, going to London during the market show to go and sell Garden Route. Now, any international person who goes there does not understand what the Garden Route is. But if you go and sell South Africa, somebody who arrives here understands what South Africa is, and once they're in South Africa, they can explore a host of possibilities. It's like somebody who goes to sell Masabatini in the United States. They will not understand where Masabatini is. So you actually shoot yourself in the foot, because by the end of the day, people will not understand where is the location of Masabatini and where to go. They will probably have forgotten that there's a place with a nice scenery called Masabatini. But if you go and reflect South Africa, that stays with them, because the identity is the country. So these are some of the challenges that are related to really marketing our tourism destination and understanding how we can pull our resources together, all of us, at the provincial, local government level. Mm-hmm. But if that's clearly understood, I would really appeal to you using your good offices. That's where you need to intervene when you interact with other structures, when you interact with the select members of the select committee to say, how do we deal with this issue so that they take this into their constituencies to ensure that we spend our resources in a much more prudent way. I think our pockets are not deep enough as a country to keep on spending and duplicating some of the activities here. We could channel them much better and get better value for the money that we invest in. But these are challenges. That's why we're there. We've got to keep on managing them. They're not going to be easy. And it's going to require a lot of help from your side in terms of the streamlining of the legislative framework and the implementation of some of the issues. Victor would come on, Chairperson, with your permission, on the DTI one, and I don't know if you want to say some of the things on the one that we spoke about too. And Chairperson and Bula too would intervene on that. Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. We are mindful of the fact that DTI has made a presentation now broadly on the operations of the scheme. But the key issue for us is that it's not about financial access. It's about what would sustain a business besides the financial support. So we are saying that there may have been this focus in terms of the financial support, but at the same time, there hasn't been sufficient focus on the non-financial support to the SMEs. An example here would be when a person has got that business idea and put together a business plan and so on. We were told by FNB, for instance, they've got a very dedicated focus on the tourism sector, that most of the SMEs, business plans that come through, actually don't make it through the first phase. So when we looked at that, we were saying, what is the real issue here? The real issue is that the understanding of how this thing is supposed to be packaged was not necessarily there. Now, a person may have this business idea, and in some instances even have the money to actually put it in. But the understanding of what it takes to run that particular business, who do you have to link up with, what are the requirements when you've got to deal with municipalities, what are the requirements when you've got to deal with the bank, what are the requirements if you're going to actually then go to DTI and try to recoup some of the money that you've already used because it is running in a particular way. All these points to one direction, creation of awareness amongst the people, the SME community, and also proper tools to support SMEs in terms of planning when they have got to actually put their business proposition. But of course, there is always a requirement that people must also show the other risk part of it. So I can't go to the bank and say I want to start a business give them the business plan and expect that they are going to give me 100%, it's unlikely going to be the case. So all these factors must be understood by the SME that is going to play in that particular environment. But our intention in terms of this involvement with the scheme is to actually get the non-financial support to the SME. Currently, we have got the Tourism Enterprise Partnership. To get into that scheme, you would have already had 2 years of running a business. Now, it is not necessarily a scheme that is going to be supporting someone to get from nothing and then get to something. And we are saying that expansion needs to be made so that you are able to then say to these particular people, we have this particular framework that you can actually use. If you want to start a business in the tourism sector and you are convinced that it is viable and you are prepared to actually have some money from your side, these are the things that you will be able to go through. So it's about facilitating that kind of environment, as we can.
Honorable members, just to add to what Victor has shared with you, when you look at the DTI incentive scheme, it does endeavor to address issues of geographic spread. The issue of broad-based black economic empowerment has been factored in the updated document. And whilst it works in a rebate system where you have to present that, it has to be a bankable business plan presented to them. And it talks to issues that Victor has raised that, is the business going to be sustainable or not? And in that regard, one then looks to other support systems that are there. When you look at the Tourism Enterprise Partnership, where we provide the basic support for SME development, whilst the core focus is all those that have been in business 2 years who are looking at growing and diversifying, there's still that element that looks at providing that basic training and information for startup businesses. And so once that's looking at what other forums and entities are there to support the small business within the tourism sector. And also under the IDC, there is a fund which is supported by DTI again, together with All Mutual, which looks at the smaller amount from about 30,000 to bring small businesses into the fold of tourism. But over and above that, I think what Victor was saying that we need to look beyond the funding. We need to create sustainable businesses. We need to bring about innovation. We need to start creating opportunities in the other provinces where which are less visited. And that then goes to ensuring that there is sustainability, there are bankable business plans. And when they're bankable, you will be able to even get the bankers, your traditional banking, to look at such proposals. There was also the question around training programs and whether they align to the industry. Our HRD department has been working very closely with CETA in developing programs and standards that will bring about that alignment between what industry requires and what the various institutions are producing. It's an ongoing process, and the private sector has also, during the summit that we had earlier in January, indicated that they are more willing to get involved in the CETA process, because at the end of the day, our private sector has to advise what their needs are in order for CETA as well to produce relevant progress.
Just one thing again, Chair, with respect to, and it comes back to the question of our Credit Act. Now, in terms of the Act that we passed here, it's literally impossible for most of the people to access financing, because they then look at the capacity and the capability of people to service the loan. Now, that's where the other challenge is, and I understand it was a responsible thing for us to do as a country to regulate the level of exposure, and the banks can have to borrow money willy-nilly, and given the financial meltdown in the last 2 years. But then it complicates the other thing, actually, the question of being able to finance the SMEs, because most of them would not have necessary assurance to get some of the finances that they make. So it's a huge challenge, unless you get a business that is established And to a very large extent, if you are to be insolvent, banks will be able to recoup their money, and that's where the other challenge lies in terms of managing that. Thanks.
Chairperson, thank you. Without wanting to create a dialogue, in some points, I wish to differ with the presentation, I mean, with the answering of the questions, because it appears as if the department is talking from a desk point of view. They don't know what to meet when we go out to talk to the SMMEs that are currently operating and those that have died. When we do our oversight, we get a different picture. Even those people who have at least started businesses, you find that they've got problems accessing development finance. They don't get that, whilst they have got their business plans. There's a lot of red tape that goes on, and departments don't answer to requests. TEP is, as you know, TEP has been labeled as a useless department to development of operators. They don't respond. This is a regular utterance from a lot of SMMEs that are operating, that these government departments are actually useless to them, because you find that even the people who are sitting behind the desk don't even understand what you're talking about, especially this thing about finance. It is not... If you're going to start a business, obviously you do have a little bit of money, but for you to really capitalize a business, you need an X amount of money, which you don't have. Banks also have got a very negative attitude towards startups. That is a known thing. They are very, very negative. And with the new legislation that you've mentioned, yes, it has become very, very stringent for operators to be. It's for people who... It appears as if it's for people who've got excess disposable income. They don't view startups as people who want to venture into business to create work opportunities for others, but to literally focus on clamping down and creating hurdles. Yes, from a desk point of view, everything appears to be okay, but what is lacking is checking on what exactly pertains. I don't know whether the facilities will have a mechanism to do that, but it does need that. When people are asking for funds, people should go out. Government must send people to go and assess whether this is really a reality, because a lot of business plans lately are being cooked anyway. So it is incumbent on the person from whom the money is going to come to go and make a physical check on the viability of such a business. Thank you.
Yeah, I think from the department side, the TEP needs more scrutiny and oversight. I mean, according to reports that we get from different entrepreneurs, I agree with the
Chair, thank you very much. It's actually very good to get a feedback on the TEP, because as you know, TEP, we have a partnership arrangement that we go on 50-50 basis in financing the activities. But in the last during last year, we had a detailed discussion on TEP in terms of their focus on rural development. We thought that's where we needed to pay much more attention. I think what we would do really from our part, and I must admit, myself particularly, I haven't been to any of the activities and interacted, for instance, with people that are being assisted by TEP. I think during the course of this year, I would do that and look at the challenge on the ground, what's going on with respect to TEP project. But we really also appreciate if members really know of specific examples to really channel those things to us. The only way we can intervene if we realize the issues, because some of the things, quite honestly, TP will tell us about the good things that they are doing, and yet if the feedback is contrary, it will be very useful to do that. But I think we'll take the view that it would be good to come to go and look at even the existing ones. I would certainly do that during the course of this year.
Still on this point, Chairperson, I think it's an important point from one of the experiences we had here as a committee. I think the member, Honorable Mugwana, I think he also has that in mind. The visit that he made, for instance, to the townships here recently and spoke to the people who are trying to participate, you know, in the activities of tourism. This was in Kailicha, Kukule, to Langa. I think those are the areas. It's obvious, you know, what she has said to be applied to that as well. Now, she is mentioning the question of the relationship and the understanding by the department of the problem on the ground, other than looking at it on paper or looking at it as you put it from behind the desk. To me, it comes back to this relationship and participation, relationship with and participation by the provinces, that we also say, look at that. Because I don't think we can expect members of the national department to be able to spread all over the country and actually supervising and observing activities maybe at that level all the time. And therefore, it comes back to the point that has been responded to, and I appreciate that very much on the question of the province. But I think we should also look at the local government as well, because we found that, you see, well, one of the complaints related to the way, you know, the communication is going on here in this area. But I don't think that it's only specific to unique to the Western Cape. I think it's the same also if you look at it to other provinces. I'm sure we'll find similar complaints. So this question of the provinces and prioritizing tourism, to me, is really very important if we think that we are to promote the industry. It also goes for the promotion of domestic tourism. They have to play an important role in promoting that domestic tourism. And at present, it's actually happening. And yet we all know that domestic tourism has got a great potential. Sometimes it is even said, and the figures do show that it can even be more, the potential is even more than the international provinces in terms of events revenue. But it's got to be promoted somehow. We've got to find ways of promoting it. That's the way that the people appreciate it. At present in South Africa, it tends to be very seasonal. You only see people traveling certain times of the year, and also it tends to refer only to particular groups. And once those programs or those groups are over, then it tends to be quiet. But I think we need to go beyond that and make South Africans realize what a beautiful country they have and how much they can learn, see and learn by taking up trips, you know. I've said before that if South African travel, I'm thinking in particular of the culture among the black people. We travel a lot, but we tend to visit relatives. That could be changed, but we need to find ways of promoting it. you know, instead of going to spend 4 nights or 3 nights with relatives, sometimes even under miserable conditions, rather that money can be spent traveling to see places in South Africa, and therefore, you know, participating in the tourism industry as well. So I think myself, the question of understanding the problem at a grassroots level also means, again, the participation, active participation of the community and the government as well. I happened to travel, you know, just this week on Sunday with someone who is in the Heritage Council, Provincial Heritage Council in the Eastern Cape. And she was furious, frustrated, complaining that the heritage sites in the Eastern Cape, she mentioned them in certain parts of the Eastern Cape, they've been neglected, they are dirty. What Mr. Krumbok has raised in this community sometimes. Mm-hmm. She said exactly the same. And she's a member of the council, but she's very frustrated because the municipalities are not taking care of them. And I think, as we have asked here, who is going to visit a dirty place? Nobody. But these are all the places are looked after. I mean, that's another area that we need to look at, because it encourages tourism people to visit these areas because they are traveling, they are attractive, and they are worth seeing. So it's a whole lot of things that need to be done. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think let us round this one up now. But I think most of the issues are still going to arise when we have the summit, where we are going to have all these stakeholders together and deepen our insights into this multi-stakeholder situation, because really it's very, very difficult to do oversight in tourism quite objectively without knowing the interplay between all these players that are there. Could be different spheres of government, could be different departments, could be municipalities that just do not even care about a museum and think it is insignificant. And war sites, there are so many of these battle sites that we are having that are quite significant, but they are not of any use. When I saw an advertisement and a pamphlet from Lesotho, they could attract a lot of local people if perhaps we had the means to advertise. But it looks like we are not advertising enough. But at the same time, we are learning. I think that is why we formed one department of tourism, and then all these things now are emerging because we are looking even closer at the picture of tourism. But we cannot keep on looking without doing anything. We've got to do something. There are issues like Port St. John's, I think. They said that it used to be a good existing tourist attraction, but it has been neglected. But now by the municipality, by the province, and then the national sometimes cannot do anything if the municipality does not ask for infrastructure grants, IDPs. The tourism is not included. There's a lot of advocacy still that is necessary from the national department and particularly the provincial department, and awareness to the municipalities. And then some of the municipalities have a geography teacher for a financial manager. And as a result, you find that they cannot keep their funds together for purposes they were meant for. They start using them for other purposes, because their basis, the budget, the budget was not formulated scientifically. They just like figures, and then when you receive money, the allocation then therefore becomes problematic. So it's all these things, and as we are learning, I think we are going to improve. And we also, as a committee, discussed that perhaps in some instances we're going to, as a country, adopt the World Cup approach, where all departments combine and say, let us attend to these results. The municipality provides the roads, the national provides the plan and the funds, province provides this and the other. All those things, and then we do the oversight and approve the funds. SFC was prepared to look at that type of funding, working together with this thing with Treasury. So perhaps with more advocacy, the department may be in a position to receive those types of funds to develop some of the attractions in the country. It's a good start, but now we better start doing and plans now about the priorities, and then see where we start. I think we are going to succeed. Then we should stop visiting the graves of our grandfathers in rural areas. When it's slowly going to happen, perhaps we can partner it. When you go you go home, you also go to a memorial site next to home and those types of things. But that is marketing. People in marketing should do their work and promote that. But I think it was a good presentation. Let us look at it, and then as we go on, we have received enough information to be in a position to respond as an oversight. Except if there's a very, very, very telling question, I think we've got to adjourn. Are there any closing remarks from the department? No. Waka waka. That song sounded very, very funny before the World Cup, but I enjoyed it during the World Cup. Waka waka. Now, thank you very much, Nair. And then let us again for tea. And then I would like to request that honorable members, those that are interested, one of our service officers who cleans the offices is going for the Western Cape Shore Angling Championships. The national championships in angling championships. So now they need an estimated the estimated cost per team member is $10,500. Yeah. And it's the guys that, but he is a champion. There are photos of him in angling. So he needs support to collect the $10,500. He needs our support. And please support.
The department has put the budget.
No. Our personal support. Please do something. He's doing a humble job, but it's a very important job he's doing for us in the offices. Thank you. Let us break for about 10 minutes and come back.
Yeah. Okay.